Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's now 10 o'clock, so it is time to open the ordinary council meeting here for Wednesday, the 23rd of April, held at 11:04. And in the absence of Reverend Dennis Cousins, I'm going to call upon the deputy to lead us to the prayer. Before I do that, though, I must warn everybody that the proceedings today are going to be recorded.
Thank you. Yes, Dennis gives an apology. He has laryngitis at the moment, so it's not good. Just a couple of people that, or one person from the area that we have thought of that has passed away. The late Jeff Jenkins. I believe Mr. Jenkins had the shop at Colebrook for many, many years. And also, we probably should be thinking of Pope Francis at the moment for all the good work that he has done in the time that he was Pope for everyone. These are the words that Dennis has given me to say. Loving God, as we reflect on the time of Easter from the death and resurrection of Christ, we think of those who have given their lives for peace as Anzac Day arrives on Friday. Please join me for the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and glory, for ever and ever. Amen.
Look, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today and recognise their continuing connection to the land, waters and the community, and we pay respects to the elders past and present. Our attendance today is minus Councillor Bisbee, who is ill, and gives an apology. And the Deputy General Manager is en route. The minutes of the ordinary council meeting have been circulated. That was the meeting we held on the 26th of March, and there's the confirmation to have a mover there. Yes, thank you, Councillor Fish, and seconded Councillor Campbell. Any issues? I put the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? The ayes have it. Thank you. The next item is committees of council, and there was a meeting of the Chauncey Vale Wildlife Sanctuary Management Committee, 24th of February 25, and those minutes are for confirmation. Do I have a mover?
I'll move.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell.
I'd like to make an observation.
Could we just have a second with Councillor Fish? Councillor Fish, yes, over to you, Councillor Fish.
People know what I'm talking about. Brian Kent, he was out on, he never went to the meeting at Chauncey Vale.
Oh, I see.
Oh, Park and Wildlife.
Yeah, he's
there. Yeah, I think you know why I thought about that.
Who else? David. Well, those minutes are for confirmation. Is there a... We've got a mover and a seconder. I'll put that motion. Those in favour? Yes? Are those against? The ayes have it. Thank you. And some recommendations in relation to that special committee's meeting. Thank you, Councillor Blackwell. Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Any discussion? Endorsed. I'll put that motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Yes, sir. Thank you. We move across now to item 6, notification of council workshops. And there was a workshop that was held on the 14th of April 25. And the matters that we discussed and worked through are set forward there. Do I have a mover?
I make a motion to receive.
Okay, Councillor Pish, have a second. Councillor Campbell. Any update on when the site master plan is going to be complete for the youth justice facility hospital?
So the consultants have confirmed and are offering a meeting or a workshop session on morning 30th of April, which is next Monday morning, prior to its release Monday afternoon. So if we, we need to notify them, it's a matter of let's schedule it and whoever's available to attend, attends. And
is it going to be via, what do you call this thing, Zoom?
Zoom, no, it'll be in person.
At Oakland or Kensington?
I think we can nominate whatever venue suits.
Well, it's funny going to be me coming. I'm a Zealand, no, I prefer the Kenton, I'm sorry.
Not sure.
We can come.
It's not sure my darling place for me.
I just have to change one meeting.
I'm happy to go to Kenton if I'm available.
Well, what are we saying? Say Kenton or Zoom?
I think it'll be in person, So we'll say 30th of April, we'll give them 9:30 a.m. start. And whoever's available, the notification out for that, and whoever's available, attend.
That's going to be Wednesday. It's not Monday. Monday's the 28th.
I'm thinking today's Wednesday.
No.
I'm thinking today's Monday.
Yeah, so it's going to be Wednesday.
So it'll be Wednesday the 30th of April.
Okay. Thank you for that.
And I just wanted to know, did we have an update with irrigation? Did Irrigation TAS give the coal size an extension of a month?
Yeah, so yes, is the answer to that. And just subsequent to that workshop, I am aware that Mr. Curtin circulated some notes or minutes from that discussion to a group of landowners. And as part of that, he also flagged this follow-up at a venue and a time to be confirmed. And I haven't seen any. I did have a discussion with Mr. Curtin following the workshop, but I haven't had any advice back as to when or where they want that follow-up.
It's good that TI have come on board and extended it.
It's really in their interest.
It is in their interest.
That's right.
All right, the information has been received. Moved and seconded. Noted. I put the nation that we received, those in favour.
Aye.
Those against, the ayes have it. Thank you. Councillors, question time. No questions on notes. Questions without notes. Councillor Fish?
No.
Councillor Campbell?
Yep. Colin Book, Post Office Shop, Veranda. Has there been a follow-up to check it out in relation to rotting timber and poor state of condition?
I will need to take that one on notice. I'm unsure. Grant money. But we'll take that on notice.
Raised it last month.
It's not a council building, but it's in the way of the council park.
So it goes over public thoroughfare.
Yeah, on the forest.
Yeah. But no, I'm not sure whether the inspections went out of the machine.
And this is one that I hope David's got his ears pricked. The shop at Colebrook, they still have a lot of complaints in relation to the toilets. And every time I go in there, I get a ear bashing about the toilets and the toilet signs.
This is a public toilet, sir.
A council public toilet.
Yeah.
But people go into the shop and at times they actually abuse the people in the shop over where's the public toilet. And the problem seems to be that signage is not adequate, nor is it big enough. Because you can drive through Coalbrook and the small signs that Jack put there, you can drive right past the Marine Mason.
Well, that would be a little bit upsizing. I can't picture what's there, to be honest.
But it would be good if someone went into the shop and had a discussion with them in relation to toilet signs.
The toilets themselves are keeping unblocked for the most part and clean, are they? No issues there. That's good.
It's just that sometimes there's a suspicion as to where they are going, whether it's up the side wall of the shop or it's down the toilet.
Well, it's very difficult for council to modify the behaviour of certain people.
Certainly can't frame that they, on the shop window there, they have just a little mark saying public toilets 200 metres south or whatever, so that's something we could possibly put on their shop window if they're willing to entertain
that. They've done that at Coalbrook, but they don't seem to take any notice. Then how are we going with the Woodstyle Rec Ground?
So they have been given development approval only last week, because there was some follow-up requests for information, and by the time that was complied with and assessed, so we are going to the next step. Now they had the development approval, they're now required to go about the process of securing all the other approvals, security approval, plumbing approval, and other approvals, plans required to comply with the DA. And it's at that point that then they must also provide evidence that they can fund the works required prior to the transfer of ownership and the allocation of their funds. So they're on the journey, but they will obviously exceed the April time frame that we were aiming for.
So just as an addition to that question, is it proposed that we do provide cash, or are we going to feel there's any kind and deduct it for sorts of things that perhaps might be required for them to pay to make their various applications?
Could be a combination. I think generally the majority of it would be paid in cash to undertake on-site works. That could be partially offset with fees that are paid to need to be covered.
Carry on, Councillor
Cashin.
Councillor.
Just some queries or questions around the bus stop and campaign and when that's going to be completed.
Works are commencing next week on the footpath, will it see it as well as my stop?
Yeah. So how long will it take to...
Probably 6 weeks.
Yeah, okay. That's all.
Okay.
I think for me, thank you.
Debbie?
Zero from me.
All right, thanks very much. I'll just give a couple of issues to the room. So that's probably general manager about them today. Are we here? Any declarations of pecuniary interest in accordance with the requirements of the local government legal procedures regulations? I've come before any declarations of pecuniary interest. Are there any?
Mm-hmm.
No? Thank you. Are there any supplementary items to the agenda?
No?
No. Very good. This is Council acting as a planning authority now, pursuant to the Land Uses and Planning Approvals Act 1993 and Council Statutory Land Use Planning Scheme. And we have some development applications to consider. This one is in relation to Baghdad Recreation Ground at 1661 Midland Baghdad, and that sports pavilion. It's called an indoor sports centre, which concerns me. I think
that is true. It's a pavilion plus the indoor sports centre.
They're separate, aren't they?
Yeah,
yes. They're separate, we can see. I think we should call it something else other than sports centre. But anyway, very good. Now, was David Campbell going to do that?
I didn't expect David this morning, to be honest, and maybe we're ahead of schedule. He could be in transit. But certainly I'm happy to present on his behalf.
Yep.
And take the as read. Certainly he's been with the council for some time. As council is aware, the project is subject to a federal grant to facilitate, or was, sorry, to facilitate the grant. The approval of the DA in this instance will actually enable it to be shovel ready for future grant applications. There's been a lot of discussion, and I'm happy to default to the DPG for any questions also, because I guess Andrew has intimate knowledge of the application as far as content, but there's been a lot of discussion around stormwater particularly, and there's been a number of conditions adopted, imposed in respect of that as well. But certainly it's happy to answer any questions should there be any from council. There was some representations of councillors from some neighbouring property owners. The report has addressed those representations in some detail. Conditions imposed again to try and avoid, remedy or mitigate those potential effects that they have foreseen. One was in relation to golf balls exiting the property and entering adjoining private lands.
Interesting, I noticed there were quite a few comments about the golf club and the behaviour of
golfers
and but once again council can't be
responsible
for that.
So. Questions also in relation to traffic generation was came forth as well. We believe there's sufficient space for the necessary car parking requirements. The increase in traffic on Iden Road isn't significant. It's a short distance to the intersection. We've involved, there's been DSG revised the application as well. So we are reliant on those stakeholder engagements as well, and we've had nothing at all as far as from DSG.
And some of the parking there, is it reliant on other areas being used that are not actually covered by this? You know, like the paddocks next door, for instance, where the overflow for a lot of events that we see at that area, that back there. Are we reliant on using that parking area to make up the, I think it's 150 odd car parks that seems necessary for this?
As I understand, the car parking, as we know, currently is informal. There's no delineation of car parking spaces, but certainly the intention would be that there'd be some formalisation of car parking. But certainly as far as the current arrangement, this should be contained within the site. We shouldn't rely on other landowners or landholders to provide car parking for the application. And I guess also it would come down to the timing of events and the demand for car parking on those occasions as well.
So there's not going to be any parking in the back. All the parking that's necessary will be on this side. That's the first thing that's considered.
Julie,
are
you thinking?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, if I can, there may be an issue if all of the venues are being used at the same time.
Yeah.
With premium events. So we've looked at entertaining a lease agreement with probably trust the other side or
yeah.
Just as an overflow potentially.
Mm.
So, by the time, and I guess it's always awkward when a property is in transition, where we're okaying buildings, once the childcare centre is built and becomes a total operating site under the master plan, things will certainly adequately at that point in time. But whilst we're in that transition, there could be the potential for some overflow into the accommodation if required.
Would that require some work to be done? Area that?
Yeah, there may be some work that will be subject to a temporary lease agreement between council and the parties.
It's not unusual in that respect to yield from other landowners for the original car parking. I think Andrew's correct insofar as the timing of events would be critical to ensure that there's actually, it may not be required at all on more than one occasion per annum possibly. And again, it's going to come down to the cadence and timing of events.
And it seems to work well when we've had the Australia Day functions there, and they've had the motor show, and that's blocked off all the parking near the ground, sports ground, and using the overflow car park worked really well then. Well, I think it does anyway.
The other thing I was concerned about is that there's representations about the bar in the indoor sports centre. I'm not sure how that was conceived as
there's no actual bar facility in the indoor sports centre. In the pavilion, there is a provided for the golf club and the cricket club casual license, but not in the actual indoor, what's called the indoor sports
centre. Yeah. Okay.
It's sort of really nothing different to what currently exists for the out of house consumption.
I was hoping too, and I know it's only semantics really, but I'd like the indoor sports centre to have some kind of other inclusive name that embraces Dan's indoor exercise rather than just simply sports, because I think it should have that cross-community attachment conception. And I'm just a bit concerned that it's going to just simply be sports, but I would like to...
indoor multi-purpose centre.
The words multi-purpose centre is used there. Yeah. Multi-purpose centre.
That's basically what it is.
Yeah. Run with that a bit more, in a way, you know, that's all. Are there any other comments? Or any other matters that you think needs to be addressed, Grant, or highlighted?
I'll apologise for my lack of knowledge, intimate knowledge around the application, and I guess we did default to David to provide the assessment and determination. We have sought independence insofar as the assessment of the application. David Cundall has provided a very thorough report and has done on previous applications, so I only have full confidence in his ability to provide a full determination and provide engaging with stakeholders and council staff to ensure we have appropriate conditions of approval. So, nothing further to that.
So the issues in relation to, erosion and all that, we have to assess that as a council. Our officers do that.
We would default to our engineering technician, as well as our works infrastructure manager for input on those. Should we have any concerns, council could initiate a Section 54 request for further information and pose a question to the applicant. I don't believe I can default to AB if we'd mind. That was an issue at all, I don't foresee.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we did have an extensive flood mapping project that we have called from Bangkok Bank Dad that did identify a range of creeks and rivulets that needed rehabilitation work to reach 1% AE. That's 1% chance of getting 100-year flood frequency in 1 year. And the area to the west of the Baghdad Recreation and Baghdad Community Club precincts was part of that, and we do have a detailed design for that flood mitigation in that water. And we have some funds in this budget this year to implement those rectification works in that water.
That was the survey undertaken by Flusiv that we've secured some funding for back in 2023. So the deputy is correct, we do have some money set aside for physical works within that catchment to mitigate those potential issues.
Just to complete the picture, I will make a comment regarding the wastewater. So I think that's got mention of our preliminary budget workshop. As Grant indicated, the DA is in place to make sure the entire project's shovel-ready. As and when grant opportunities arise. However, given the, as we know, the precinct is about to transfer ownership to council, wastewater is an immediate priority. Unfortunately, that can't wait until the balance of the development takes place, so there will be an issue to consider in this forthcoming budget about addressing the urgent wastewater issues.
Very good. Well, look, with the leave of the meeting, I'll just make a minor amendment to the recommendation. Just where it says sports centre, we'll just call it a Māori youth centre, if that's all right. And I'll just use that as the recommendation. So that we're asked now to approve the DA for the sport pavilion indoor multi-purpose centre.
Well, I'm happy to move it.
Car parking overlooks are found in real organisation. Thank you very much, Deputy.
And I'll second.
Thanks very much, Councillor Blackwell. Any further discussion? I'll put the motion over the vote.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. Thanks very much. As of 10, should we continue with this one? Alright, so item 2.12.2 is a development application in relation to a subdivision at 365 Green Valley Road, Baghdad. That's a 10 lot subdivision there.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Mann.
Yes, we'll just wait. We'll get to the end of that because you're going to lead us through that, Grant.
Yeah, thank you. So, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The application is for a 10-lot subdivision. The subject land is zoned rural living C, which allows for a 5-hectare minimum lot size. The land area is 65 hectares in area. The site does have a number of constraints insofar as it does contain landscape dispersive soils towards the road boundary. It does contain a high cover of vegetation, including some threatened species. The application was supported by a number of supporting documents, including a traffic impact assessment, a bushfire assessment, and a natural values assessment, and a geotech assessment as well. Of note, on page 62 is the reference to the TIS, which has been provided by Hubble Traffic. And there's a few conclusions in there, insofar, and happy to walk through those if you wish, but certainly they have determined that the additional traffic from this proposed development is not expected to create any adverse safety, amenity, or traffic efficiency problems. As there is sufficient capacity within the road network to absorb the extra traffic movements, which is about 7.4 movements per dwelling house. So 10 lots, Lot 1 contains existing dwellings. There'll be potentially 9 additional dwellings coming into that, onto that road, possibly. Being on site, the road corridor is quite narrow, but in my opinion, if you drive to the conditions, narrow width certainly reduces your speed. The report mentions there's sufficient pavement width to accommodate safe and efficient passing of opposing vehicles. I've experienced that myself. Existing access to Green Valley Road will be upgraded in accordance with the GATT standards to accommodate two-way traffic movements, which will be a standard condition of approval, and there's sufficient site distance, I guess, both east and west from that junction onto Green Valley Road, which is sealed at that junction as well. The TIS recommended that Council consider a reduced road speed limit on Green Valley Road. Louisa in her report recommends that this should be reviewed outside of and separate to the application for subdivision. And I guess Council can look at that separately. The site does have quite a steep gradient. This is the Cumberland. Excuse me. And again, a section of the gradient is greater than 20% in some places. The TIS refers to this and talks about that's acceptable for short distances. But the steep sections will be surfaced with asphalt rather than a two-coat seal to meet the standards of the bushfire code. So there'll be sections of gravel, sections of two-coat seal on the asphalt for the length of that driveway, which will be maintained by those property owners. There's no intention that this will be maintained by council. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes, those
the national qualified
access
assistance. Yep. So it won't be a council maintained road at all. It'll be maintained by those 10 individual landowners. Threatened species. Again, we had a natural disaster assessment prepared by a suitably qualified person, and the survey identified 4 native and 1 modified vegetation communities were mapped on the property. We know that the subdivision will require land clearance to accommodate, you know, access and building areas, and the Natural Matters Assessment has a number of recommendations to minimise the clearance, and these have been adopted as conditions of approval. We did have some representations received during the 14-day notified period. These have been addressed by Council's planner on page 67 of the agenda. And Louise is quite satisfied that the application and her responses can certainly appease the minds of those submitters. They do have a right of appeal in relation to the decision of council, as does the applicant should council seek to refuse the application. The application has been recommended for approval with a number of conditions, notably in relation to condition number. The roading is particularly of interest given the its gradient, the requirement for a asphalt and gravel construction, and condition number 26 provides, I think, that certainty around the road construction. There are a number of conditions that would require potential monitoring during the course of the development, but certainly this has taken some time to get to council. We've had in place a lengthy request for further information from the applicants. So we're very happy to see this one come to council with a recommendation for approval. Happy to take any questions.
What's the length of the roadway that is going to have to be maintained by the lot owners for the site to be utilised?
Oh, the length of the road?
Well,
yeah. I'll have to look at the...
I'm just looking at the blue map there.
Sure.
Where I'm getting it just concerns me that there's a fairly long, reasonably expensive piece of road to maintain. The expectation possibly is on the person who buys that lot, whether it is council road going to be maintained by the council, but the ongoing maintenance of that fairly long road without some covenant perhaps on the block that they be required to do so could lead to, well, chaos really in future times.
Agreed, Mr. Mayor, and I believe that's where it's a matter of, cabinet or let the buyer be aware. When you go into those situations, fully aware of what's expected as a landowner, what we have here is an access lot, so it's owned by those 10 landowners. They'll be responsible for that.
I understand what their responsibility would be, but I just foresee the council will be asked to come to at some stage in the future about this unless it's provided for in some real way. And I'm just not sure exactly how that was proposed to be done or how big the obligations are likely to be on the people that own those lots. I just wasn't able to get my head around that.
Because I can remember on my first road trip we did on Council Road, we went to another block that's up there. On top of their hill, and they have the same issue.
Yeah.
They've got to maintain it, and there was the conflict between
some people didn't have any money to do it.
That was the same situation.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, can I provide a comment, please, in relation to the road? So the proposal is so the main road, which will be asphalted, will be a council maintained road.
Sorry, this is Green Valley Road, correct?
So, no, the actual subdivision road that's going to be built, where it talks about or references that they will be, it's the only driveway going off that road.
So we're going to build a road through the subdivision.
No, so the developer has to build the subdivision road, the main road, and then treat it like driveway accesses onto that road. That is where the responsibility of the property owner will be, not the actual main section. That will be.
But we are going to build and maintain a road through the subdivision.
No, the developer's building the road to our standards, and then we will take over that main road.
So it will be us that's maintaining the road.
Correct, but the long, lengthy, some of the driveway accesses might be up to a kilometre long or half a kilometre long. That would be their responsibility to come onto that road with a cul-de-sac head at the top of it, and then the blocks will shoot off from that. That is where their responsibility will be.
Condition 56 refers to a defects maintenance period, so it'll be constructed by the applicant. After 12 months, council will assess the nature of that road and whether we assume its maintenance or whether it requires bringing up to standard again. But again, council would not seal any final plan survey until all conditions have been complied with, and roading would be a critical one for that as well.
I haven't been across the block, so I just know the area is pretty steep up there.
There's a very short, steep section between Green Valley Road and the summit or the skyline that is quite steep. With that you have stormwater generation management as well. Again, we have conditions of approval that were required and they are addressed. But certainly the maintenance period would capture any potential defects and limit liability for council. But certainly the issues around access, the shared access ways would be, it can be quite complicated, but with an example last year in Oakwood Drive, where council's being asked to maintain a section of road or driveway which was fairly unnavigable and had some issues on terrain, we refused to do so.
And the actual roadway, Green Valley Road, where this all empties out to, is sealed at that point.
Correct. But that would be required. They've got a gravel driveway onto a sealed corridor. That would be required to, through the gas standards, provide a seal to the road boundary. It was going to be sealed anyway.
Any other questions, councillors? How are people feeling? Let's go have a look at it. It is very good.
Councillor Fish?
Second.
Second to second, you've got a second?
No.
The other one's second. Any further discussion? No, I'll put the motion, those in favour?
Aye.
Those against?
The ayes have it.
All right, well, I think that concludes the session of council acting as a planning authority. So I'm going to revert back on the agenda with the concludes of that to public question time, which was scheduled for 10:30, and I thank the members of the public who are commence, but we just have to continue to finish that work as a planning authority before we do that. So we open now for public question time. Are there any members of the public who would like to? Yeah, we'll just see if there's anything from 11 to 11 contingent. Any members of the public who would like to ask any questions of council? Just feel free to put your hand up, and it's a good idea to say your name, and then we've got a record of who you are, and we'll get help for.
Stephen Booker. I'm just asking about the water levels of Black Dolphin, which seems to be dwindling, and I'm understanding that what I want to know is how the water is replenishing the lake. I understand it's pumped from Blackmans Creek, but is there a strategy or a management plan in order to sort of maintain the water levels there? Because they have dwindled.
Yeah, look, the first point I'll make about that before I call upon Councillor Fish and the General Manager to reply, because they're right across this, is that it's managed by state government. It's not a council property to manage. Jim?
Fairly complex, so it's... So the water was basically, it's just an inland waterway that was fed by natural rainfall. Going back, it's been dry for many years in the past. I'll cut a long story short, when the Midlands Water Scheme was constructed, the state government, the water entitlements are owned by the state government, but council can channel 387 megalitres of winter water into that lake as a supplementary source. Now, it's either 387 or 287. Anyway, it's a limited amount of water that can only be channelled in during the water, winter period. You might be aware that there's that fun wall around the rear of Mary's Island, so the sites and the past rainfall records and everything, that amount of water was aimed at maintaining the lake at a certain level. Unfortunately, despite rainfall records that went back 100 years, we're just not experiencing that amount of rainfall. Hence why the water level declines, particularly during drought periods. But it is a challenge. Council, as the Mayor said, it is owned by the Crown, the Parks and Wildlife. Council does have a management committee and a lease over the lake. There's a number of issues with that at the moment, with dealing with the Crown. Whilst the state government owns the water entitlements, it does cost council about $27,000 a year to run a supply purely into Lake Dalton as a supplementary source. And beyond that, they're at the hands of the gods.
There is a bore feed some water into the
very front section.
Next to the town, yeah.
just purely in terms of an overall management strategy, basically. Mm.
And that's the role of that, the management within the lake itself?
That's one of the ongoing issues. It's aquatic vegetation, yes, as opposed to weed.
Yes.
The management committee identified a number of issues and are waiting on advice from parks as to what's particularly the latest type of vegetation.
It's a native.
That's a native.
It is a native weed. And unfortunately at our last two Lake Dolton meetings, Parks and Wildlife haven't sent a representative. So we cannot ask any more questions or any further questions of them. And we were dumbfounded last year when we thought we were running under the correct rules, and we were told no, it should have been the 1980 legislation that we should be running under. And we're just trying to figure out at the moment and asking them for help to provide some new wording that we can use. And when they don't turn up to meetings, it's very, very frustrating. But hopefully, we've been promised that there'll be someone at our next meeting in early May. So, hopefully at the May meeting, there'll be the minutes of our meeting in the agenda, and we'll have an update on what's actually going to be happening. But we, with the weeds for the guys that are fishing, we're sort of hamstrung because they can only cut weeds to a 10-metre circle.
Not weeds. Vegetation.
Native vegetation. Into a 10-metre circle. But I believe they're allowed to be, only allowed to be 100 metres or apart, or 200 metres apart. So we're finding it very frustrating at the moment.
So myself and Councillor Fisher, the chairman of the Lake Dolton Committee, recently wrote to the Director of Parks to express a number of frustrations and concerns regarding the lack of information and advice that's coming back from parks. So hopefully that's now to be addressed in the short term.
Thank you. I have a second question. Coming up to Anzac Day, of course, you're aware that there are five stone pedestals sitting in High Street on the western side. One of them only faces the footpath. The others are all sort of pushed all out of the way because of the trees, etc. I'm just wondering if the four that face back into the parking areas are able to at some stage be reset facing the footpath so people don't actually have to go out onto the roadway to greet them, and that they can be sort of a little bit more nicely placed within the road setting.
So I need to refer that to the RSL, I mean.
I'm not sure if there's any rules around how those things, but no, certainly makes sense.
Mm-hmm, it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was involved in something similar up in South West Rocks where the RSL South Branch actually got a grant to be able to relocate their memorials and restore them. But I thought, you know, there are only four, there are five, but four of them are the ones that I was sort of particularly concerned about, that's all.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense, and I don't think it's a big job, does that?
No, I don't think so. Thank you.
We'll certainly ask a question about ourselves and consult them anyway.
Thank you.
Very good. Yes, Jordan.
I refer back to your discussion about the Tasmanian Youth Justice Facility at Pontville, and the release, potential release of the plan on the 30th of April. It was my understanding originally that there was going to be public consultation. Is that your understanding as well? And
I think the public consultation, I haven't seen the site plan myself, so no one has. But I think the public consultation is consequent upon this release.
Well, at this stage, there's nothing to talk about because nobody really knows what it's going to look like or what the footprint on that piece of land is actually going to be. But this will give people something to talk about, I guess. That's really the aim of the exercise there, I think.
And you haven't heard of a public consultation time?
Yes, no, I would imagine that all this
great
yes. Through Mr. Mayor, we have been advised by the applicant that they were going to publicly consult on April 30th to May 25th. We were hoping to have a debrief.
To May when?
May 25.
25, yeah.
So the intention is that council will be afforded the first view of their master plan before it goes to public consultation on the 30th of April. Council offered DPAC and the applicant the chance to present at a closed workshop today, but DPAC don't have staff available this week, unfortunately. So we are going to, the GM and the mayor and maybe council also going to meet with the applicants on the 30th prior to this being made publicly available. This is a 30-day consultation period. So,
thank you.
Anything else for you, Tom?
No? Well, we'll close the public questions.
I don't know whether or not did those ladies from
No comments?
No issues?
All right. Did they put it in one of you? Yeah? Yeah. Well, you had a good time?
Okay.
All right. Another second. Okay. Move the deputy and seconded Councillor Campbell. We suspend the meeting for morning tea. And put that motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? The ayes have it. We'll do that. It's all we talk about. We should like to do
it. I did get it out.
Officers' reports, I think, which is item 1310, Manager of Infrastructure and Works.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Any questions regarding the report?
No questions, but I'd like to commend you on your survey. Everything's very strong, or strong improvement bar about one, I think, or two. So it's well done.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a combined effort, obviously. Yeah. But every 3 years we have a condition assessment undertaken, and they done, Maloney's done the condition assessment 3 years ago, obviously. And yeah, it's pretty pleasing that it came back with basically what he's telling me personally, that you know, they look after, well, they do condition assessments on 72 councils across Australia. A lot of them mainly are Victoria, New South Wales and Tasmania based. And, you know, we hear, I hear continually how bad our road network is, and what, there's a lot of issues out there. However, generally, it's been pretty good nick, considering both our sealed and unsealed roads. So, yeah, but he did make the comment that, yeah, look, he said you have nothing to worry about, your level of expenditure, your funding is okay.
Yeah, more than
adequate.
He needs more than adequate. He needs more.
So, yeah, look, I did. Obviously, I highlighted that first section. The road assets within something were generally found to be very good to excellent overall condition when benchmarked against all 72 councils. Assessed.
Well done.
So, Look, I'm not saying everything's perfect out there. It isn't. Of course, there's the potholes and the corrugations, and we're struggling a little bit at this time of the year with the lack of water to be able to undertake unsealed road maintenance, because obviously we need water to do that, and that is a real struggle. So we're doing the best we can with the resources that we have.
How many kilometres of dirt road do we
have? 630, I think, from memory it is. 630, roundabout, is that right?
Yeah, about 630.
About 630 and 220 odd in seal.
Is it cheaper to maintain the bitumen roads, or is it cheaper to maintain the dirt roads?
Unsealed roads.
Actually,
cheaper. Yes. That comparison's been done many, many times by various councils over the years, and yeah, it's far cheaper to maintain a unsealed road, because what happens when you turn the brown stuff into black stuff is obviously your depreciation costs go up.
Yep.
So that comes into it as well, and then you bring it up to a standard. You've got guideposts, small guideposts, you have culverts, you have just everything associated with the sealed road network. Yep. As opposed to an unsealed road, where basically you just have a formed road with some drainage on either side and run the grader over it as required.
So that road, the marshes road, or whatever, would come up here?
Yes, yep.
Where it's basically...
New country marsh?
Yeah, where it's basically onto rock now. How do you get that? Is that better to convert that into bitumen, or is it better to try and lay gravel on top of it?
Look, I guess in an ideal world, everyone wants to see sealed roads everywhere. But once again, it comes back to that cost and the vehicle traffic counts, the topography, there's all various reasons as to why you seal a road or don't. But that one, certainly I came through there myself, and that needs some resheeting. So we'll put a layer of gravel over top of that. But once again, it's when the weather conditions allow that, because at the moment it's just too dry.
And that's still cheaper to do that?
Absolutely.
In the long run?
150%.
Are there still a lot of log trucks using?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a major, and has been all my life that I've lived out this way.
Correct.
There's always log trucks out there, a lot of log trucks using that road.
Yeah. It has eased off a little bit because Karaka, the railway there, is closed at the moment, so they're not accepting logs there at Tasrail.
Yeah.
At the yard, so that has helped us.
Yeah.
A fair bit with the amount of log trucks on the road.
Well, when I passed some yesterday, they were coming out of Stonehenge Road.
Yes.
Onto Woodstone Road and out that way, so expect that road to be cut up a little bit soon.
Yes. And we get notification from logging companies where their coops are and where they're going to removing trees and stuff like that. So we do plan for that. And if we need to do some resheeting in some of the areas, we do.
Yeah. Talking about tree removal, I'd just like to commend you and the guys for getting in the contractor and doing Nama Road and taking all those bits and pieces that I requested to be taken out, and I have had comments back from the farmers that do use it regularly with their large trackers and big spray units, and everyone's very happy, so thank you, guys.
Yeah, no problem. We've had a number of roadside trees removed lately for the safety issue, and there's some money being allocated in the budget next year to continue that program.
Yes, good idea.
We could spend a small fortune on tree roots on our rural roads.
I've got three for you, David.
Yes, if you'll just start up the new application. Yes, Captain Campbell.
Windaston Road, you come up by the railway crossing, there's a very nasty drop off right on that corner on the bitumen road. What chances are there of getting that filled in, so that people who like to cut that corner coming the other way don't push into that hole?
I'm assuming you're talking about the embankment side?
We've got the railway coming from Colebrook. You're going down towards Colebrook, it's on your left.
Yes, I know where you're talking about referring to, Councillor Campbell. There was an accident there a few months ago with a involving a young lady. It was purely speed related. She ended up in that culvert there. But there is a plan for the budget next financial year to stabilise and seal that section, starting down in the bottom of the hill for about 1.3 kilometres up the hill, up Lindaston.
Did I notice going down towards Colebrook, there's a few edges on the way down that could do with a bit of gravel on them. But that was the worst one. As you come over the railway line, you've got that nasty hole. Woodsdale Road, I think you know that road. I noticed that there's a couple of edges between White and Woodsdale that are coming out into the road, and there are a number of edges that could do with a bit of gravel down. Now whether you clean the drain out and just spread alongside the road or what, that's your problem.
There's a couple of those edge breaks that you're referring to, or the road that the contractor has missed, and he's got them programmed to go back and finish on.
Then Eldon Road, as you're coming from Colebrook in towards Tunnock, there's a whole lot of trees that have been felled on the side of the road. Whose responsibility is it to clean them up, or what's happening there?
Are they on private property?
I don't know whether they're on private property or they're on the border of council property.
They've been taken away by wood people at the moment. They're chopping them up for firewood. So I'm sure they'll be gone soon enough.
That's basically my lot.
Thank you very much, Councillor Campbell. Did you have any further, Councillor
Bennett? No. So, in regards to those trees, is there, because there's some quite impressive trees that seem to just be chopped down at wind. This all over Tasmania now, but is there anything that can be in place for sort of offer some protection for some of these bigger and more impressive trees? Or do they have to, they can just be cut down at wind?
In response to that, Councillor Miller, so the normal process is someone that wants to do the right thing will contact us in council and say, is there any covenants or anything on these trees? So there's a what's called a significant tree register in Tasmania. If they're not listed on that, and they have an arborist report deeming them to be unsafe, so if they've had a qualified arborist to inspect the trees, basically there's nothing much we can do. We can't go give an arborist advice if they're unsafe. But I would suggest that probably 50% of the people out there, they just cut them down.
Yeah.
And probably I guess they think, these are asked for forgiveness, permission sometimes. It's a difficult one to manage trees.
It's a shame seeing some of those big trees just being chopped down for no reason.
Mm-hmm. In defence, though, sometimes there probably is a reason. Mm-hmm. As I said, if they've had them inspected.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd suggest, probably the norm is to not have them inspected and mm-hmm. just take them to the council.
Yeah.
Yes. No. Debbie?
No, my comment.
Yeah. Just a couple of ones for me. Is there a start date I think should be able to be predicted for the commencement of the Kempton to move to walkway or pathway?
Within the next 2 weeks.
Great.
Will it commence? Yes.
Good news. And just wondering what the stonemasonry works were that predicted to be commencing shortly. What are they?
So we have some various ones. There's been a couple of private works jobs that have been undertaken for Ray Williams at Cornelian Bay. That's one, but then there's some on our own assets in and around Oaklands. There's some repair works to some walls on some of our buildings that need to be done. They've been on the books for quite a while, I believe. And yeah, that's certainly going to keep our stonemason very busy for the next 3 to 6 months.
Good. Well, thank you very much for your report. Do I have a mover of that? I'll move the information we received. Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Can I second that?
Okay.
Thanks, Deputy. Unless there's any further discussions, I'll put the motion that the infrastructure and works report be received and the information noted. Those in favour?
Aye.
Aye.
Those against? The ayes have it. Thanks very much, Doug. We go on now to item 15, which is the Heritage Project Program Report.
I'll move.
Thank you very much, Councillor Campbell. Second. Second to the Deputy. Any discussion or questions there? I don't think Alan Townsend is with us tonight. The finalisation of the Jericho Avenue of Honour has been on everybody's, had us on the edge of our seats for 12 months.
2 years.
2 years.
It's been probably longer than 2 years.
Much longer than 2 years, I can remember.
Longer than 2 years, all right. Well, basically, it's...
it's an end of the site.
Yeah, well, we have had promises that it was going to be done by that day. And I think that promise has been broken. Because Anzac Day is on Thursday. Friday, sorry. And I don't think it's going to be ready. I don't think. Can anybody answer that question?
No. No,
yes, the gentleman. Definitely.
I think the plaques are in the process of being cast, but it's going to be, unfortunately, May when the plaques are completed.
All right.
I popped in the other day and saw the artist in residence and some photography. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I've got a move in a second. Any other discussion? No. I'll put the recommendation of that information be received and noted. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Now, the NRM Programs Manager, Mayor Williams.
I'll move to the report.
Thanks very much, Councillor Campbell.
Aye.
And thank you, Councillor Fish. Any questions? Any issues? Very good. I'll put the motion that information be received and the information that goes in favour.
Aye.
And against? The ayes have it again. Thank you very much. Deadly nightshade is not found in Tasmania. True deadly nightshade. I don't know what the, does anybody know about deadly nightshade?
It's a big family and the one that they're referring to, that's not the killer, it's the cousins of it.
There we
go. It's not a species. Some species. I'm going to
your listening to your greater knowledge. Woodsdale Cemetery Management matter, item 15.5. General Manager, Mr. Kirkwood.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So there's three parts to this report. So the committee, the local group that volunteered a number of years ago that anticipated the transfer of ownership has met on two occasions, so the discussion notes are there. They've reviewed and brought forward for adoption the terms of reference, which are extremely basic because whilst when this was first talked about, they were going to act as really a true management committee. But now with the obligations and responsibilities of the cemetery manager, council has had to retain responsibility for that, given the, won't say the complexity, but the obligations and the paperwork. So the terms of reference have been adapted to suit the circumstances. Second part of the recommendation is to actually appoint the individuals to the committee, and they're listed in the recommendation there. We note that there was still one vacancy. They're on a mission to try and recruit a younger person. And thirdly, we're all aware of how the cemetery committee operated in the past, where there were no burial fees and the likes. So that's been a little bit of a challenge as to how we manage that going forward. Keeping in mind that the cemetery is basically totally managed by volunteers, when you put it in perspective, there's maybe one, two at most, burials or interments each year, so it's minimal activity. So the committee, or the interim committee, has developed a fees policy and submits that to council for consideration. So really, it starts with a fee that is identical to Campaign Cemetery, but then there's a number of discounts if you meet one of the circumstances. And we've done our best to try and define those circumstances and make it not too difficult to understand, no, hopefully.
That's true.
You're the chair of it. How are you going to define local?
Define local?
Ah,
well, quick. To define local, you must live or have lived in the Woodsdale, Leverdale, Runnymede, Whitefoot area.
Yeah.
Okay. Or your grandparents or great grandparents are there already and you want to be with them?
Oh, in the cemetery, yes.
Yes, okay. That's another way.
Yeah, good.
That's local at the moment.
Community.
It's all very
clearly understood.
Yeah, well.
What I was going to add, how Tim said you didn't pay. Well, there was always donations, and most families always gave X amount, whatever they felt fit, to the cemetery committee at the time. And the committee has got a nice balance, so there was always, But see, it's hard that we don't want the Joe Blows from the Kingston area or the Premadina area or something thinking, oh, well, it's cheap to come to Woodstow, we'll be buried there. Well, if they do decide that they're going to come there and they have no connection, well, they're going to get charged.
Is there a limit on the existing, the degree of separation between the family member who's in the cemetery and the family member that you want to put in there?
Well,
can I be up to the
committee?
Or cousin removed or something?
You know how
particular they are at this time? Yeah, it was very tight.
And
there
is
still a lot of... It's a special situation. If you look at the notes, if there's any doubt, then it goes to a... It is. It's referred to the committee for assessment.
And there is still quite a bit of land that can be... was set aside as well, the cemetery at the moment, which is connected, so
we'll make a point that this is a fee that is set by council. It's not fixed in stones. If issues do arise, then we change it. We address it at that time, I'd say. But it's certainly something, a policy that the committee is happy with.
Yeah.
In terms of where they've been and how they need to operate in the future.
And just remember, this is a fairly passionate committee. There have been residents of Woodstow or still residents of Woodstow and of Leverdale, and they're very passionate and they want to keep their cemetery as much as it has been for 150 years or so.
And the budgetary implications of council in maintenance of the ground and all of that, is that still to consider?
Well, it is.
So there will be an allocation in the budget, just as the way that they've operated in the past. They've done two working days a year.
Easter and Christmas,
which keeps it tidy and presentable.
And I drove past this morning and it looks fantastic.
And if someone falls in a grave while they're doing that, Are we cut it or
no? Hence why we as the council is maintaining responsibility for the bookings.
Yeah.
All the paperwork that follows an interment. So as part of seeking appointment and being appointed as the cemetery manager, it places a lot of responsibilities on our forms for the funeral parlour to actually provide evidence that they've reinstated, done all the things that they have to do under the various legislation. So it's really, in terms of preparing the gravesite and then reinstatement, it's back on the funeral parlour. We have a man on the
ground. I've spoken in words and verbiage. I've covered Diane's maturity.
Yeah, so they had a working beat prior to the Easter, so they were provided with, even though they're an interim committee, they were provided with voluntary registration forms, acting under the umbrella of council. But we do have a particular, well, he's brilliant in terms of Adrian there on the ground. It's taken the lead in basically managing the cemetery for a number of years.
Recording all the the records are up to date, and I think there is only one grave they're not sure about, so they know about everything. So there's a huge map which we're going to put on display, so if anyone comes out there to do a bit of family history.
Well, that's beautiful.
I'll move.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Secretary, Councillor Campbell, that the recommendations there, A, B and C, we're going to vote for them in one block. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? The ayes have it. Thank you very much for that, and thanks for all the work you've done there. Thank you.
The general manager should be back because he's been working on this for 13 years.
Yes.
Right. My sister's taking our
center. So those circumstances, we get up to item 1561, annual animal management report. What have we got into that? Thanks, Deputy Secretary. Thank you, Fish.
I have a question.
Yes.
When they refer to stock four, I know in the past they used to do it and say whether it was cattle or it was sheep or whatever. Definitely wasn't cattle. It would be interesting to know what the stock is that's been the problem. Whether it's cattle, whether it's sheep, or whether it's goats, or...
All right. We'll refer that to her.
Thank
you. Yeah, well, she says she can particularise her reporting.
So just one question in relation to the infringements that's been issued compared to the relative number of, I guess, issues. Why is there such a discrepancy between... There's only one been issued that... You know, year to date, there's 20 odd incidents here. Are we not looking to enforce some of these things against the owners who may not be on?
It's a good question, actually.
I can answer one question possibly through Mr. Mayor, but certainly to both Councillor Campbell and Councillor Miller. I'm looking to actually update the table and provide some qualification around. You know, where these have been seized from or where the infringements are actually occurring, area specific. As far as the infringements go, happy for input here as well, GM, but certainly the council officer will make the determination whether it's appropriate to infringe based upon the context. I know we had a situation in Colebrook the last 6 weeks or thereabouts where this decision was made not to infringe because they couldn't identify the landowner. Oh, the dog owner in question. So it's pretty much, at the discretion of the council officer. Tim, I want to provide further qualification on that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, is that only one in the interim, in the report period, rather than year to date?
Yep.
I'm thinking it's only just one in the report.
It's probably welfare issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, whilst there, because there's more incoming in the general ledger for infringements than the month. So I'm thinking that it's just one in the month period.
And the revised table hopefully will actually have, it'll be from meeting to meeting, so it'll be monthly.
Yeah.
And we'll have a year-to-date column as well, so yeah. You can correlate between months and the year totals as well. So that'll come forth hopefully next council meeting, the new revised table.
So looking at stock, where we had the problem up at Yarlington, there'd be more information on that than what we get at the moment.
Yes, it would be. Yeah.
Very good. Got a mover and a second, but I'll put that motion in for further discussion. No? Those in favour?
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it. Thanks, councillors. Now, there's an item here in relation to the Doc's home of Tasmania and we've got the material from Doc's home. Is there a motion? Recommendations there.
I'm happy to provide some comment. Unfortunately, Rachel's on leave today, but certainly this has been with council for some time. The Docksmen of Tasmania are looking to restructure their fee arrangements and impose a set fee per council per annum or a dog per day fee. So council's being asked to look at one of those options. There's been some discussion between Rachel, myself and Tim in relation to the best option forward. We've given a background as to the necessity of the Dog's Home for this council. We don't rely on them significantly as opposed to other councils particularly. I think in the last year we've had 5 cases or dogs referred to that institution. And we've given a breakdown of the cost per dog should that be the fixed fee option moving forward. It's expensive. The recommendation looks at some suggestions in relation to, you know, do we look to work with other LGAs to, you know, provide a solution across neighbouring councils. But we're looking at, you know, potentially a 1 year, sign on for a 1 year fee to see how it works, and we can make a call beyond that date. Certainly it's a significant increase. I believe there's been some budget allowance in for the next FY to account for this new fee structure as well.
So Grant, the 7-2 Central Highlands being charged, or do they use Dog's Home? Are they being charged the same fee?
It would be the same set fee across each council.
Right.
Yeah, so the more dogs you have going in, that's the city.
The city to pay.
Oh,
that's
they
don't
have to pay, yeah.
You'd be cheaper per dog. The more dogs you have, certainly.
But if we were only paying $68 a day, wouldn't we be better off?
It's a gamble.
Well,
it's
a gamble.
That's a lot of money. They didn't get a race that's paying for $68 a day.
This is probably fair from a financial perspective, but it's a gamble. We've got no control on how they feed them.
That's it.
Yeah. We can take them to the dog's home. And after the minimum period, I know what I would do with them, but they probably take the period of, well, we'll keep them for weeks and weeks and weeks because we're going to get $68 a day until someone rehomes or in 2 or 3 hours.
They have a policy not to euthanize the dogs. So
that's, we're gambling basically. Because there's no incentive for them to move it on because they're actually earning money on a per day dog basis. So,
but can't we control that?
Well, no, once we transfer responsibility to the dog's home, that's why, what's this one, was kept for 78 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was probably a nice little...
Well, doesn't it say there were 5 in total for 78 days? So rather than that being one dog for 78 days?
That's assuming if all 5 dogs were kept for the 78 days multiplied by the daily fee.
Yeah.
Then.
But shouldn't we recover that from the owner of the dog?
Well, the reason they would need to be rehomed is we don't know who the owner is.
Mm.
So they're non-chipped.
Yeah. So no one can put their their hands up and say, well, that's my dog.
We've made some comments about, you know, could we claw back a fee, you know, through, you know, setting our own fees possibly. Again, that's...
You don't know the owner is correct.
Yeah, right. So, I guess it's, if a dog's being purchased from the dog's home, can we... we can't at this stage recover any monies from that transaction.
Alan, I just think it's... $7,200,
it's
a lot of money.
Hence why one year trial, just to try and get it. If we empower them and get them in our facility, by the time they're fed, and you know, keep in mind over a weekend, we're paying overtime rates for someone to come out and feed a dog and all that. So we transfer all that responsibility by having this arrangement, but yes, it does come with huge cost.
So how long do we empower them for before they go to the dog farm?
48 hours.
So council will actually workshop our new fee structure, animal control, shortly. So we're looking to bring into play a fee for, you know, a weekend call out. We might want to increase our fees more than CPI across the board to, you know, to maybe recover some of this cost moving forward. As a dog owner myself, you know, the fees you pay in our LGA are significantly lower versus, you know, Hobart City, for example. And what do you get for that fee, registration fee? Really nothing. So we might want to look at, you know, potentially looking at increasing fees. And council will make that option, have the opportunities in our workshop that shortly, that we're setting the fees.
I think that we should have a better policy about that. Like, if a dog is... doesn't have any registration at all until we find it. What's the incentive to keep it? Well, seriously.
So, that is another option, is to have them immediately euthanised.
Beyond the impounding period.
Yeah, and keep them for a minimum period and send them to a vet to be euthanised.
You have to extend it to if someone's gone away for the weekend and they come back and...
Yeah, but that's not registered. I'm talking about unregistered.
But even if it's unregistered, they still need the
opportunity. These are unregistered, non-microchip dogs. Depends on where you sit in the animal welfare spectrum. So, is that the description?
But that's pretty right. If you had a sheep that was unregistered, what would you do with that? Put it in a home for $68 a day?
That's
ridiculous.
No,
seriously. That is a valid discussion.
We're sitting by hard and fast on that 3 days, and I know staff do take a very sympathetic approach to the impoundment. And we only refer dogs to the dog's own, you know, on a real as needs basis. We always try and be home. Within our own means.
About a dog home. You could start a dog home.
I don't want to have a dog.
There is an option that we can actually defer a decision at this meeting and lead that into the discussion at the workshop that Grant's referring to, because it's not appropriate to try and pass this fee on to every registered dog in the municipality, because keeping in mind this fee is directly linked to people that are not doing the right thing,
exactly,
not
right,
registering the dog. So
they can't stand it like that, but they're doing the right
thing. It's very much a, you know, potential for a workshop discussion in conjunction with setting the registration fees for the forthcoming year. And it's an opportunity where Rachel can explain in detail what her current procedure is. And then council may make a decision to say, give them the minimum amount of days, and then they will be sent for euthanised.
What other organisations are there apart from the dog's home that doesn't
exist? No, it's really RSPCA. They're not quite suitable for accommodation.
There's 9 licensed accounts. Mm-hmm. 10 licensed accounts, sorry. That's certainly for the dogs.
So it's dogs on the Tasman.
We can resolve from the further decision and have the discussions part of it.
Would somebody like to move that we do that?
I'll move and second.
Thank you, Chair.
I'll second. Thanks, Councillor Campbell. The motion now is that the decision on the dogs home at Tasmania issue be adjourned or deferred.
Further discussion
and further discussion to be held at a workshop. Move the deputy second, Councillor Campbell. I'll put that motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you.
So I think that's a brief grant that the dogs homes don't receive any government funding at all for a lot of requests and things like that to keep going.
And the report gives a background on their foundation and revenue stream that's sitting so long between. It's pretty amazing at the moment.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, we're moving up now to the Oakland Flight Centre, I think. Item 16.2.1. And the report's there. And the information that we received and noted, so we'll have a mover. Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Any questions or issues in relation to that information?
Just a statement. I'm hearing that kids' parties are picking up at the pool, birthday parties.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard there was one last weekend and there's another one this weekend.
Keep them coming. Move the motion. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Thank you. And then the recommendation is that we agree to allocate a place name for the park area being developed on the corner of Island Lakes Road and Blackwell Road and Mow Road, and name the park CLOAM Park. Just before I take a second, just to move it, I've had a bit of not arguments with you about this, but to me, whether it passes the pub test of the mayor spending, $1,000 or one of his father in the park in Melbourne, may not pass the pub test, and people may not chance at that.
Can I make a comment, Mr. Mayor?
Yes,
I have definitely taken the lead in putting this proposal forward. As the Mayor said, he felt a little bit uncomfortable, but certainly from my perspective and for the reasons mentioned or detailed in the report, irrespective of the current Bat family donated the land where the park is being developed, assigning a place name to this park is more than totally appropriate. And in this case here, to be named the CLOAM Park. Probably just for clarification, it does need to go through to the nomenclature board as it's assigning a place name, but I think that's just part of due process. But I just wanted to emphasise that I am taking the lead for the man indicating his nervousness.
Yeah, well, that's right. And it could have been called Stone Clock Park or something like that. There could have been other options. We could have gone out to community consultation about it. All these sort of things crossed my mind. But the GM thinks that it's appropriate that we crack on with CLOAM Park. And look, there's a lot of good reasons, I must say. My old dad should get the.
As a young person growing up in Kempton, I could say Mr. Batt was one of the people that everybody in Kempton knew, and he knew everybody at home. He was a fantastic bloke. He was, so I think it's all deserving.
I'd like to see a little bit of modification. I'd like to see the word Memorial Park in there somewhere. Because once it's memorial, it's a lot harder for someone to get rid of it. And the other question I got is,
Okay. We refer to Charles Batt. Who was the Batt that was Health Minister?
Neil Batt.
Neil Batt. Mm.
Yeah. He's a cousin.
Kevin is Kevin politics, isn't he?
I don't know what the thought is, but keeping in mind that the direct linkage is with the Melk Mowbray area. It's not. Operational matters arising from the strategic plan. We've got the LGAT Lift the Tone campaign. Information to be received, and we're resolving to challenge the normalisation of abuse. I think this came about just a mention by the Deputy Mayor in terms of, you know, LGAT's launched this campaign and what should we do from it. Southern Midlands perspective. So I just thought, let's bring it onto the agenda and formally acknowledge the campaign and commit to it.
Definitely.
Very good.
If I can just speak, at the Mayor, Deputy Mayor meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago, and then, of course, the three of us attended the general meeting to start off with the first day, just listening to watch some of our fellow councillors on other councils going through at the moment, it's horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Some of them are too scared to even go on to do their grocery shopping because of the physical and verbal abuse that they're copping from morons that sit in their electorates. So I just really would like all to consider, please, to take up this challenge because and be kind to each other.
I think it's a very worthy campaign, and I think we're all supporting your passion for it. Do I have a seconder for this? It's going to be moved by
you. I'll second it.
And seconded by Councillor Blackwell. Any further discussion?
No.
Those in favour?
Thank you.
Those against? The ayes have it. Thanks very much for bringing that to your attention. And look, seeing as we've come to elected member statements, perhaps I better just add myself that I attended the LGAT meeting where Bush Matter and Rush was raised at our meeting in April. And just to report back to councillors that there was four motions there, one on the seven-star energy rating being applied to buildings.
That
carried. Our direction from our council was to vote against it as an issue that, you know, largely raised the cost of buildings, and we felt that was unnecessary within our area. So we voted against it, and indeed so did the majority of councils. Line marking funding was another matter that was raised by way of a motion, and everybody agreed that the state government should chip in more money for line marking, so that was carried. The public open space area funding arrangements to ensure that some clients pay those, that was carried as well. And the motion in relation to offshore oil and gas exploration by, I think, Windies Council, at your direction, we voted against that, and that wasn't carried. So they were the motions that succeeded and didn't succeed at the meeting, and it was in line precisely with the directions that
this council gave me to vote. Does anybody else have elected member statements that they want to make? Yes, Gavendish.
Yeah, well, I think I should have done a question time, but I'm really concerned about that board there at Braddock.
Right.
They're in a very small paddock, but then being dead, I think it didn't have any sense. You've got those sheep and the horses in half an acre of land, that are good.
It's a stud, isn't it?
It is a stud.
Are they planning, sorry for interrupting the council,
Anyone goes by and have a look for it, it doesn't mean get there on this half acre of land. They've been probably fed. Jane Cameron, she's been on it.
Well, perhaps it is a matter that may need to be explored from a planning perspective. It's a stud, not being used.
It's not going to be a stud.
It is a stud. Through Mr. Mayor, myself and Rachel Collis did a site visit with the stud owner, about 2 weeks ago, in fact, because we're mindful of we're getting a number of questions being asked at council through question time in relation to the horses on the property. So we're entirely comfortable with the arrangement that has taken place on that property, insofar as Taz Racing are also mindful of the operation. It is their own property at Amtill Ponds as well. So they lease other properties around Oglands and around the area for the keeping of horses. They've got one stallion on the property and they've got a number of mares within that paddock. The paddock, you can see, Councillor Fish, extends beyond the Brooks line and heads south. And it's quite a large area. All that dry feed in the paddock is $200,000 of dry feed. They go through 5 barrels a day for horses within the vicinity. As far as the issues around nuisance, odour, flies, vermin, we're more than comfortable with what we've seen on site, speaking with the stud owner and the regulations that are being applied to it through Taz Racing particularly and through the RSPCA. She has 40 to 50 horses on her property, one stallion, the rest all female horses, are they mares?
Mm-hmm.
She has Bebs and Darrain who frequent the property consistently. Animal welfare is not a concern at all for this council. As far as any planning approvals, if we were to apply a DA to a rural property for horse breeding, we'd apply the same, in my opinion, to like a livestock, for example. It's a wee bit unreasonable. But certainly, a small section of that land is zoned low density, the balance is actually zoned rural, where it's being conducted from. But that's
really good. Well, yeah. Thanks very much for making that investigation.
I have a comment in relation to Parada. I noticed there's a number of new faces moving into the area, and I was talking to some people in Parada the last week, and the people that live down the bottom by the railway line, I hope you're listening, David, they would like their footpaths upgraded, and when you come off the walking track from Oakland's, the walking track comes to an abrupt end. They would like to see that carried through into the township, so it's somewhere so you can go over the railway line, and from there on you've got footpaths which you can walk on. That was one area of concern they had. The bottom area, they wanted the footpaths done. But the upper area does not want the footpaths done. They want it left as a village up on the hill. So you've got this two different groups in what they want and what they don't want. But the two of them come together and they want something done with the rec ground in the way of entertainment.
Budgetary considerations like that.
And when I mentioned soccer before, they've got 10, they went to the Oaklands now. So, I don't know.
Well, thanks for your attention to the broader area of Councillor Campbell.
if a proposal is brought forward for that, we can look at it from a budgetary position, I guess, in relation to the footpaths. We are determined, I think, to do some works on the other side of that road, the Parada. But I think there is a commitment from council generally to try and upgrade the Parada area.
But the other part would be good is to bring that walking track into the town more.
Any other elected member statements?
I'd just like to let council know that Broadmarsh Hall is back up and running since its pump was stolen. We finally got a new pump put in. They did at one stage locate the pump on Marketplace, but when the police did the raid of the property, it was stolen.
Did they find the thing that was stolen?
Yep, they can't charge them because there's no evidence of it. But they had it on Marketplace, and
that's a social site,
and one of our young people in the area notified me through Facebook again. He saw it and notified me. It's quite a distinct pump. It's very rare. The plumber's words were it's a very rare pump to have out there, and they did say had little use. It no longer suited their plumbing needs. In other words, it didn't fit their plumbing because it was done for a hall, not for a residence. But we ended up having to get the new one anyway. So, but the hall is back up and running and so activity again.
All right, well, thank you very much, elected members of the provided statements. Finance Officer Mandy Burberry for the update. The information is there to be received. I have a move.
I'll move.
Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Seconded.
Yeah, I'll second.
Councillor Blackwell. And we have Ms. Burberry at the table. Are there any questions? Anything you want to highlight in relation to it?
No. Business
as usual. Could I ask, Mandy, as my eyesight fails me, and being the youngest at the table probably, you're all well accustomed to this problem, but mine seems to be getting to that point now, but can we maybe make some of these tables a little bit bigger, even if we have to go to two tables?
Yes, that's right.
That's probably more my printing, actually.
Yeah.
But yes.
Okay, you can ask me a question I've done it many times before.
So we're going to make the figures bigger.
Well, you can take that 2 ways, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. Council, I have a suggestion. Probably going to cost a few trees, but it does make it a bit easier. All right, well, there's no questions in relation to that, okay? I haven't got anything on. The policy review, unreasonable complaint conduct policy. Did you want to speak to that, Adrian?
Just very quickly, if you like, Mr. Mayor, it's policy that I pulled together quite a number of years ago. We only had, was brought about by one particular complainant that we had. It was the only time we ever used part of the process, but it's there as a legitimate way of addressing issues in a rigorous and structured manner. And it came from a draft from the Ombudsman's office, so I think it's still consistent, the wording, although the practice manual has been updated, but the practice manual isn't policy. We draw on that as a separate document, and that will be updated from time to time. So I commend the document to you.
Do I have a mover?
Yes.
Councillor Beckham, I'm seconding the deputy.
Yes.
Where does this sit within the complaints process, given that if they lodge a complaint with LGAT, for example, do they then refer it back to council and you say, well, is it part of this policy or is this how does that sort of work in practice?
I guess, Helen, if someone complains to LGAT, they would refer it back to us, I guess, and then we'd work it through our normal process. If someone that's never dealt with council before, and it might be something that I could do with, or the manager of infrastructure and works can do with. But this is a policy that says, and the example from how it happened before, a particular person would send me an email, send Dave an email, Dave's predecessor, Tim, and other people, and try and push a particular idea and get an argument in amongst council officers. Mm. So it was really inefficient for letting that proceed. So it's about this policy, once it gets to be a persistent particular issue, that's persistent demands, persistent arguments, things like that, there's got to be some way of breaking the mould. Mm-hmm. So this breaks the mould in relation to this, and it's up to the general manager, based on the appendices that are in that document, as to what course of action is taken. Mm-hmm. And it might be that that person, if they are a persistent complainant, can only deal with the general manager. Mm-hmm. And if he wants an interview with the board, meeting with the general manager, that defines times and based on new evidence provided. And so it provides a whole structure in really to address the person's issue if it's a legitimate issue, but if it's a time-wasting activity from the complainant, then it looks to neutralise that to a large extent.
I think this probably found its way onto the agenda today because the Deputy General Manager and I participated in the Right to Information review. They came to Kempton and spoke to us about it, and so I think they were interested in how we dealt with that request for information from council and at the practical approach to it, and they were interested in what policies we had in respect to it, and I think you're now going to make this policy, having been refreshed and renewed from council's perspective, available in the review. That's right, isn't it?
It is, Mr. Mayor. They did seem particularly interested in it. I would have thought it would have been commonplace to have a policy like this, but it didn't appear to be. They were quite surprised when we started to talk about it. So, yeah.
So that's where it came. Yeah, look, basically, from members' information, council officers' information, the council has a fairly practical approach to when people want information about things, where a stormwater drain is or whatever. But other councils, I've discovered, have a different policy, pay us $57 and we'll send the man out there to point it out to you, or whatever. And the disclosure of information delivered to people is done on a very formal basis, which sometimes leads to issues between the person seeking the information and council, and with a policy, probably unwritten policy, really isn't, but it's one where we give the people as much information as they want. And
within bounds.
Within bounds.
Policy issues and all that.
Yeah, but how information is to be disseminated from council was being reviewed by this team, and they came and saw me, and fortunately AB was able to make a major contribution to relieving, and this part of this contribution was what in relation to this policy was one of the issues that came forward out of me.
All right, having said all that, I'll remove and the seconder put the motion that the unreasonable complaints conduct policy be endorsed. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? The ayes have it. Is that going to stay away for a month or does that come back in a month?
No, because it's unchanged, we would normally just review it.
Now, the next issue is the monthly financial statement, and again, we have financial statements in many persons with us. Information to be received and noted, we'll have a mover there. Councillor McMichael and seconded Councillor Campbell, thanks.
I do have a question.
Yes, go
for it. I'm not picking on Mandy for her good work, but I remember when I was in council before, we used to get all this information that's in small print on A3 as an attachment. And I'd like to know why we can't have that now. Because it's not that easy to read when you've got to put a pair of glasses on and still get the magnifying glass out to read the small print.
I can do it in A3 for you. That's all you need to ask.
My tree's been cut down.
And I have to
fold
the pages,
but
you
know. Is it the cash flow that you're worried about mainly, or what?
Is it all of it?
All
of it.
All the small stuff.
Right. Well, what if I gave everyone a magnifying glass?
Do you have access to a computer?
I do, but I'm not online at the moment.
Because then you can, make it bigger. I don't know, look at stuff, there's a...
I can do it, it's okay.
When I get a chance to have an MBN meeting, then you'll find out why I'm not online.
I've just got a question. The vandalism in the public toilets, where's this happening?
So it was a problem in Campania, right. I know, and there was another one, I think, we had to replace the coal.
It's not an issue in one Campania, it's been very many years. Yeah.
It's the best than a campus for me, but it's still not acceptable.
Can our councillor this is getting on his last one?
His
eyesight's obviously okay. Yeah. All right, and a mover and a second. No further discussion?
Huh?
No. All right, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Aye. Thank you very much for the further. Very good. Now, we're going to see you, and that's the grandee from the department.
Hello.
Deputy Secretary of Council. Very good, no need for discussion there. That's pretty straightforward. We'll put the CEO on $80,000. Those in favour?
Aye.
And against? The ayes have it. Thank you. And then we've got the Heritage Projects, Great Britain's. Do I have a mover?
I'll move. I'll second.
Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you. Municipal seal there. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? The ayes have it. And then, that's up there for the items. We've now got some issues in closed session. So, recommending that the following items we dealt with in closed session, the minutes, the application for leave absence, the sale of property for unpaid rates issue, and audit panel minutes. I'll move it in.
I'll move.
Thank you, Councillor McCormick. Seconded.
Not second.
Councillor Fish. Those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The ayes have it. Thank you, Sheila, for the recommendations. We're moving to closed session. And the meeting be closed. The members of the public, Councillor Campbell. Can I second that?
I'll second.
Deputy. We now close to the public. Thank you, members of the public, if you could please stop recording. And we recommence recording and we close the meeting. Thanks very much for everybody's attendance. We close the meeting now at 12, what is it, about 34?
Very good.
And I think we're going to...